Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
There's a lot of things that on your in your forum, your talk radio forum, that people latch on to and take as gospel and then use that as a way to, you know, not only criticize, but, you know, mock, name call. Every time I come on now, it's become interrogation. They're not interviews. They're interrogation. And, you know, we come in our positions, we come on respectfully, okay? And we get asked a lot of tough questions. I've answered every, you know, I answer every tough question. I'm probably as direct and honest an executive as there is in the city.
There have been three rebuilds.
No, I wouldn't even consider the first one a rebuild when first got the job, because we didn't have anything to do with that. All we did, well, I came in and we turned it around. So how many? There haven't been a lot of rebuilds. There was one when we got Derrick Rose. I would say that was one. And now there's this one. There have not been other ones. So I think that's a misstatement. You know, I do. There have not been a lot of rebuilds. I get fans' frustration. I'm frustrated. We're all frustrated. I'm as passionate and loyal about the Bulls organization as anybody out there. So, you know, I mean, that's just a fact.
Here's Otto Porter Jr. stops, left wing three, bam! Timeout, Nets! We got Levine, topside deep, three, nope. With the clock expiring, but Otto Porter there to save it. Nice job, Seldon, back to Porter, open left corner three, wow. Bam! Oh, back-to-back jabs! The Nets will inbound. Bulls are going to win this baby on the road here in Brooklyn. Nice way to start a back-to-back in 3-4, and this ball game is over. Bulls win it, and as the horn will sound, Bulls win, Bulls win, Bulls win, 125-106.
So I'm sorry to report to my friends in Chicago, the nightmare continues.
Chicago Tribune sports page?
Really?
Column by Stephen Rosenblum.
Steve Rosenblum. You know him? Never heard the name before yet.
Steve Rosenblum.
I think Chance the Rabbi is the way to go.
Brian Peruk.
Well, when's he coming back?
I said, do you want to come back? And it was an emphatic no.
We're glad he misses us.
Sitting in for Mike Esposito, who's sitting in for Jordan Bernfield, who's sitting in for Wayne Randazzo, who's sitting in for Mark Grody, who's sitting in for Brian Peruk. It's Matt Spiegel.
This is funny, because we're trying so hard to make this funny, and it's not funny.
They suck, so you don't have to.
Baseball is full of suck right now.
For some reason, they sing.
With a duck duck here and a quack quack there, right?
Take the last train to Turdsville, and we'll meet you at the station. Take the last train to Turdsville. They're in need of sanitation, don't you know?
Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa.
They won't stop singing.
Lido.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
It's a master's course in stupid.
You're tapping two kegs of stupid, and it is really flowing.
What percentage is $5 on 100?
They have celebrity rebukes.
This is Wayne Mesmer, Senior Executive Vice President of the Wolves. You know, in all my years involved in sports and many teams, I have never been involved with something that sucks so badly.
The three words that best describe this show are as follows, and I quote,
stink, stank, stunk.
It's Rosenblum and Spiegel on WSCR 670 The Score.
We should be 670 WSUK.
Good morning, welcome in. 11:06. You heard John Paxson. So all you've heard is John Paxson on with McNeil. McNeil and Paxson. I think that's what the new show will be. McNeil and Parkins.
Just give it time.
And there's a bad win following worse management. You heard Chuck Swirsky describe it. I'm Steve Rosenblum, also known as Venus in Blue Jeans, and he's Matt Spiegel.
Why are you Venus in Blue Jeans?
I heard that this morning. I'm flipping around. I heard Venus in Blue Jeans. I thought...
Not forever in Blue Jeans?
That's me. No, we discussed that last week. That was the Mondegreen. Reverend Blue Jeans. That's what you hear on a Sunday. No, Venus in Blue Jeans.
Oh, wow. Going old school.
It was very old. Right. And I thought, that's me. And you're the doe-eyed Matt Spiegel. Welcome in. We have Saturday suckage, and nothing says suckage better than Bulls management after a useless win. So I'm just going to turn it over to Matt Tankathon Spiegel.
You know,
everything bad this week.
Oh God, Steve!
All the crap.
Help me. Let's converse here, and just map what we have. We have the best free agent summer since the summer of LeBron that the entire league has been looking forward to for a long time.
Planning for it,
right? We have the Bulls not beginning their rebuild process until after the three alphas completely and utterly failed. So 1 year late, they started their process. Mm-hmm. Oh, isn't that interesting when you hear them talk, they're not ready to capitalize on this free agent class. Remember that year that they completely should have punted and did not because they wanted to fill some seats and get the sixth seed or the seventh seed. Mm-hmm. So now we have them after 2 years. Okay, some decent draft picks. I like Lowry. I like Wendell. I don't think Zach LaVine's a cornerstone, but whatever. So they're not ready. So they respond by not being ready, by sadly making a trade that has some logical sense to it.
Damn it!
Because you go out and you get a good player. He's a good player, Otto Porter. I like him. This isn't about him. But you go out and you get him. He's making $26, $27 million. So you're paying a cornerstone price for a guy who is not going to be one of your cornerstone pieces, but maybe you'll flip him. You've got him for 3 years. Anyway, it's just a placeholder while you move the goalposts and continue your beautiful job security managing this pile of suck, right?
So far, I'm with you.
So far, you're with me.
Wait, when you say something wrong, I'll...
Okay. Then, by the way, you go on a couple radio stations this week, including ours, and completely embarrass yourself with a ridiculous amount of defensiveness and some tone deafness about your reputation around the league, right? But aside from that, then Otto Porter gets here, and last night he played really, really well. And you won a game in Brooklyn against a real team. They're a real team now, the Nets. They're probably going to make the playoffs. D'Angelo Russell is an all-star. And you freaking won a game. And now it looks like you're going to play your way out. You could play your way out of the bottom three and end up with some garbage 7-9 draft pick. How many different ways can you screw up a year in the middle of a rebuild? You fired the coach. And so you don't have consistency for your young pieces.
You hired somebody from the 1979.
Who doesn't know what the hell he's doing, and now you're kind of coaching him up, but whatever. And you almost had a mutiny, and you're running this weird system, and you got worse. You're screwing up, guys. They screwed this thing up so many different ways. And now, as you're finally, thankfully, in position to be in that bottom three at the very least and give yourself a shot at Zion Williamson, now it looks like you might be decent enough to play your way out of it. It's a freaking nightmare.
Compare and contrast that with the Knicks, who have seemingly an opportunity to get the first pick and appear to be angling to create two max slots.
And at least they're New York. They're poorly run, but at least they're New York, so they feel like they've got that going for them. And they've got the space. They're ready for this summer.
They're awfuler. They're more awfuler than John Paxson and Gar Forman, if you can believe that. And they're more attractive. You tell a superstar, you bring your best friend. We got enough money to pay him. And look at that. We could end up with, they might end up with the number one pick.
Mm-hmm.
That I will never give the Knicks credit for planning that, but they fall up, as Shel Silverstein would write about falling up. That's what happened, and that's where they are. But let me go back to something you said about the three alphas here.
Yeah.
About filling seats. And the money that was needed to be spent or not or whatever, if you're, because I never thought of it the way you said it, about, okay, we're going to fill seats, we're going to sell tickets, we're going to, if that was orders from your garden variety Reinsdorf, right? Then does that buy GARPAX more time, more cover for job security?
Sure.
Because
bought them an extra year because they didn't start the rebuild then?
Because they were, or maybe forever, because it was one of many times that we don't know about. That just struck me, the way you phrased it, that just struck me. Do you think that's, because it's inexplicable that, as you said, this is the summer of greatness. This is the summer you buy your way into the top three of contention, not the top three of the draft. So you do that this summer. You plan for that. You look at that. Not every team did that. Not the one in Chicago.
Nope.
And the fact that how can you be management and say, how come we're playing, we're admitting before the trade deadline, or at the trade deadline, we're going to be playing in the shallow end of the pool in the deepest free agent class since LeBron, Wade, and Bosch. So I don't know if your management, how you, unless you as management are responsible for retarding the clock, the schedule.
That's what they've done. By going in that direction with the three alphas, they delayed this. And now they've missed this particular window. Next year's free agent class is bad. So they're going to miss that window. So now they've bought themselves another 2 years of job security and forced patience from ownership. There is nothing lighting a fire under them. There is no sense of pressure on them. And as angry as we can be, as angry as we can be, as angry as fans are, there's no sense of pressure on them. And if you were listening to John Paxson with McNeil and Parkins, it was Mac's question about how do you respond when there are people texting in, calling in, saying these guys are under no pressure, and that's when Paxson lost it. When he lost it.
That's why I thought we should do the McNeil and Paxson show and just let this Danny circle above. And by the way, it's on iTunes, and I don't know all the things the popular kids do, but Danny tried to, I stand corrected, because when I was listening to it live and then listened to it the next day, I worked with Bernsey yesterday, and I had said, Danny presented Pax with what we believe to be true, and he said, give me facts, give me names, give me quotes.
Yeah.
And Danny didn't, but Danny made a really good point. He said, listen again. I listened again to this particular part. And what Pax would do was hijack a particular point that had nothing to do with exactly the point that Danny was making about the mocking of the, I mean, look, the Sacramento Kings mocked you. They beat you. They mocked you. They clowned you. The Sacramento Kings clowned you.
Yeah.
And then you hear the reports, and Pax wanted to know what was reports. So we talked to Adam Silver. The NBA Players Association didn't contact him. Well, they don't have to. The players just have to contact the NBA Players Association. Then they'll decide what happened. So so it got hijacked. Danny did a really good job, and Danny cited a bunch of reasons and a bunch of quotes, and there's a podcast, but
yes.
I don't understand.
Well,
he
followed up. This is what happened, is that Parkins, you know, the next day after Paxson had said, give me examples, the next day,
and then
Danny went and got examples. And the next day, and I just tweeted that podcast, where he went and found quotes from players, coaches, media, agents, trainers, a lot of it on tape, and played the tape, examples 1 through 9, I think it was, of people saying bad things about the Chicago Bulls as an organization and why they are undesirable. So,
and the entire Van Gundy family.
Yes. You name a Van Gundy.
They're all of
them. They've
got
something bad to say.
The Van Gundy Thanksgiving must be some Bulls talk.
Pass the stuffing and Paxson's a jackass. It's all in one swell foop, right?
Yes.
Well, and that goes way back. I mean, first of all, Tom Thibodeau is their guy, right?
Oh, yeah.
And it also goes way back to when Jeff Van Gundy called Phil Jackson Big Chief Triangle.
Right, and called Michael Jordan a con man for the way he'd pat guys on the butt. Go, hey, yeah, man, you're looking really good. And then he'd go out and kill him. But he called him a con man, and Michael hung 50 on Van Gundy's Nets, or Knicks. That was, I remember that. That was on, that made the score.
Yeah.
That was McNeil and Boers. That was a heavy fuel crew.
Yeah, right.
I remember Michael Zamora got me the tape. I transcribed it. I waited. I was at Bulls at the Berto Center before 8 in the morning, knowing that's when they'd come in after that. And Michael stopped and said, I have to read this to you. And he said, he used a naughty word, and then he put 50 on him. I said, oh, thank you very much. There you go. Yeah, so the Van Gundys have all kinds of reasons to hate him, but it's real, it's legit,
it is
solid, whatever the Bulls want to believe or not believe, whatever delusions they have. And speaking of delusions, David Schuster will be here with information. No, he won't. He'll just be here with movie reviews and Oscar picks. But it's Bulls and Wizards, so the trade comes
in.
This is perfect.
Did you see what Bobby Portis did last night, by the way?
We're going to get to that. We're going to get to what Bobby Portis did and said.
And the Bobby Portis revenge game is tonight. Yeah.
And Mark, David Schuster will be here at 11:20. We'll take a break, get to him. Mark Gonzalez will be here. We'll talk Cubs, the beginning of spring training, and a little bit of Frank Robinson, too. I know that they crossed paths, and I just maybe the most underrated superstar. I mean, the guy, he for the longest time was fourth in legitimate home runs in Major League Baseball. And at 1 o'clock, Steve Ashburner. We'll talk some NBA with him, who won, who lost. Why are the Bulls doing what they're doing? We'll see if he can figure that out. I am Venus in blue jeans, and he's the doe-eyed one. Saturday Suckage. Hey, look, it's Saturday Suckage. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
If we just stay patient and grounded and we keep long-term in mind, which is really my primary responsibility, keep the long-term in mind, then we'll see. And if it doesn't work, then the people who want me out will probably get their wish. So, but there's going to be, we're going to take some time in doing this the right way.
Okay, that's...
The laugh track is a nice touch.
Yeah, I didn't know if it'd be Seinfeld or Curb Your Enthusiasm by the end, but that was the sound, the voice of John Paxson came from the traditional Christmas, the interview that David Schuster, our next guest, does with John Paxson when they go away to a manger and have the interview, and then...
They build a snowman together. It's really beautiful.
And then... Zach Withers put the laugh track under it to underscore John Paxson's firing on Danny Parkins during that interview, that he couldn't even make a joke, that's what John said, it was a joke.
Mm-hmm.
When I heard it again...
You know, when you have all that eggnog, all that spiked eggnog.
All that in the... Yeah, and things in a manger, you know, frankincense, myrrh, you just never know what you're going to... So, let me ask you this, David Schuster. Hi, how are you, David Schuster, first of all?
Well, nice talking to you guys. It's been a while.
Yes,
it has been. But I want to, we replayed that yesterday when I worked with Bernsey, and I said, I've known John long enough, interviewed John, and talked to him and seen, I could hear that sentence, and I could imagine a smile. I sort of heard that smile in the answer, that because of my history with John, and I have no idea what you remember from that or what you saw, but you're a material witness to this to this case. What do you recall about that specific line since it came up in the interview?
Well, honestly, I thought about this over the last couple of days since that happened, and I don't remember his facial reaction, but I sort of took it at the time as tongue-in-cheek, like he said to those guys. I really don't think he meant... you know, that I'm going to throw in the towel here if things don't work over the next whatever span of time. So when he said it was tongue-in-cheek, I took it at the time as tongue-in-cheek, but honestly, I don't remember his facial reaction when he said it.
Okay, now here's David Schuster. Here he joins us. We have the Bobby Portis revenge game, the Otto Porter revenge game. We have Bobby Portis is just a piece of work. I love this guy. He's so much interesting now that he's gone.
So much fun. Well,
now that he's gone, because he's firing on... Okay, so yesterday, Otto Porter hits his first three shots, right? As a Bull, right? He doesn't take the first one until there's like 9 minutes in or whatever it is. And, oh my God, look at this guy. He's found a place. He's finding a place, and he hits and he hits and he hits. And all of a sudden, the court became bigger, wider, whatever. So Jeff Van Gerten, part of the Score broadcast with Chuck and Bill, he tweets out, Otto Porter has hit his first three shots. And Bobby Portis would tweet back later, I hit my first six with a Wizards, man. I mean, he's giving an LOL to Corey Westerlund from 2 days ago as he's doing.
That was the amusing part to me. And I mean, I saw both of those and I'm thinking, my God, he's following everybody and he's responding to everybody's comments now that he's gone. And I got such a kick out of that. I'm going to miss Bobby Portis because, and I did some remotes with him, you know, in the past also. Really fun guy. And he opened up more and more as time went on. So I'm going to miss this guy. And he's a good ball player. You know, the Bulls just didn't want to give him starters money if he wasn't going to be a starter. But, you know, he's going to end up being a starter probably for Washington. He'll get his money, which is, you know, ultimately what I'm sure both he and his agents are looking for.
I understand why they traded him because he's, you know, he's essentially a luxury piece on a good team. And you're not in any position to pay him as you're figuring out what the hell you are. But see, here's the thing. I realized that their failure to get the most out of Bobby Portis is emblematic of how this thing keeps feeling so screwed up. Like when you're in the middle of a rebuild, you can find guys. You know, you can find guys. It's why I get angry when I remember back that they had Spencer Dinwiddie in camp and they decided to cut him. And now he's, you know, he's a net.
Actually, he's hurt, isn't he?
He's hurt now, but he played himself into a contract and like a very solid NBA player all of a sudden. It's why I hate when they get rid of second round picks for $3.5 million. You might get a Jordan Bell you could actually use. They did well to draft Bobby Portis where they did. And then he developed a little bit. And then this year he took a step back, I thought, because in the Boylan idiotic offense, he didn't know what the hell he was doing.
Is that the title of it?
And now the timeline doesn't match up, so they have to get rid of him. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like they keep screwing up the little things like that. They're bad at evaluating talent.
Are they really bad?
And here's another aspect. The rebuild keeps changing.
Right.
It changed with this Otto Porter trade, obviously. They basically said that they're not going to get any free agents over the next couple of years, so they had to go out and get a small forward in a trade in Otto Porter. I want to throw this question out to you and to everybody else. Let's just say the Bulls get super lucky, and that's what it would be for them to get Zion Williamson. You tell me with what they have right now, what the Bulls starting five is next year, if Zion Williamson is drafted by the Bulls. Help me out with that.
Jordan Pippen.
No. I'm being serious now. What's the Bulls starting five if they draft Zion Williamson? And he would be a starter, obviously. So tell me what their starting five is.
Okay, so you've got Markkanen.
Stretch five.
Exactly. Markkanen is a stretch five.
Well, stretch four.
Okay, well, Zion, where are you playing Zion? What position?
Well, you're going to have to play him at three. You're going to have to, even though he's sort of a hybrid 3-4. But he's going to be in your starting lineup.
And he's going to play four, and Markkanen's going to play five.
I think Markkanen, Zion, and then Zach LaVine, and then Otto Porter, and your veteran point guard that they bring in instead of Chris Dunn is Derrick Rose.
No, you're right. Wendell Carter is going to be their center next year.
Okay.
You know, no matter what. Markkanen is going to be your power forward, stretch four, whatever you want to call him, no matter what. Let's just say your guards stay the same, and Chris Dunn is at least iffy, but let's just say he's the starting point guard. Zach LaVine is still on the team as your two-guard position. And then Otto Porter, who you just traded for $57 million for the next couple of years, is not a starter.
Okay, so he's not a starter.
No, see, that's why I think they would go ahead and play super small and positionless, and maybe Wendell has to come off the bench for starters until Zach, or you know what I mean? Like, I don't know exactly what they would do. You think Wendell's going to start and play every game next year?
Yes, he's their starting center going forward, yes.
Well, I don't know that you have to be married to that idea.
Maybe it changes
opponent to opponent. And who's going to be the coach? Are you going to have a real NBA coach, or are you going to have Jim Boylan?
That's a good question in itself. And do you want Jim Boylan to be the coach of a talent like Zion Williamson? These are all questions that, you know, are fun to think about, and maybe they'll be answered down the road. But like I said, you know, the rebuild keeps changing on the fly, and maybe that's the way it is around the league. I don't necessarily blame the Bulls for making this trade the other day because they don't see getting a small forward unless they get really lucky in the draft, and that's why they went for Otto Porter right now, and obviously Jabari Parker was ticketed out of here. There's no question about that, and if it took Bobby Portis to make the trade work, then unfortunately that's what had to happen. But the rebuild seemingly changes a lot on the fly.
Talking with David Schuster, we're doing it here on The Score, talking Bulls basketball. So Bobby Portis had back-to-back 30-point games for two different teams. Nobody's done that before. And here he comes with revenge on his mind. Those crazy eyes are going to get crazier. And Zach LaVine, good close with Bobby Portis, says about tonight's game, we're going to try to give them a good bleep you game. And Bobby Portis said on TV, I think the Wizards got a steal with me and Jabari, and that was given a retweet by Dwayne Wade that just said facts. So I don't know what you expect, what you think, what you hear about tonight's game, but it sounds interesting, doesn't it?
Oh, 100%. I mean, this might be the game of the year, at least to look forward to. I mean, obviously, there's not going to be any postseason basketball, no playoff, anything close to it. So this might be the closest thing to playoff intensity because of the emotion of a lot of guys. And let's not forget, unless he's still going to be injured, Niko Mirotić is the next home game. So that'll be the first time he might play in an opposing uniform at the United Center. So after Monday, there's probably nothing to look forward to other than to see if Otto Porter fits in here. How about Zach LaVine also, by the way, saying this is the first time he's had fun in a long, long time. What a sad commentary that in itself is on the Bulls this season.
Okay, but why do you think that? Because Jim Boylan is still the coach. It's not like they were released from Boylan prison.
They won big. That must feel outrageously good to Zach LaVine, who's lost 200 games in his NBA career.
Also, the court got spread. Otto Porter Jr. spread the court, and the ball movement yesterday was unfortunately exceptional.
The Bulls played a decent game last night. Now, again, it's against a team that's really not that good, and as you said, Spencer Dinwiddie's not even playing right now.
Dinwiddie.
And the Nets were not playing much, if any, defense, but the Bulls actually looked like an NBA team last night.
Oh, God, it's all just so sad.
Because you want that top draft pick,
well,
that's why you say that.
Because if you don't finish in the bottom three in a year like this, you're not doing your job. You're just not. And the way the league is constructed, when there is a prize, you have to finish in the bottom three. You have to. And you have the opportunity to do so. It's like when they didn't trade Pau Gasol because they said he was part of the core, and that was an opportunity. They could have fallen into the lottery that year. Mm-hmm. You know, like they have failed to take advantage of those kind of opportunities many, many times. And the league is so screwed up, you have to take advantage of those.
And they lost the coin flip where Sacramento got the second pick. They tied with Sacramento last year, six. One got six, one got seven, whatever it was. They lost the coin flip, and Sacramento moved up. However, that spot was chosen, those ping pong balls came up. So they got unlucky there while they were getting. Speaking of getting lucky and unlucky, David, let me ask you this. Speaks brought this up, that the three alphas year, which they had money to spend. Maybe they were ordered to spend money to fill seats. Is that a creation of your random Reinsdorf in ownership to make sure seats got filled, to put on a show on the floor that bought extra time for Garpax
to rebuild
security or whatever you want to call it? You just keep rebuilding every year. Did that buy them some shield? Do they get out of getting fired for 2 years kind of thing? Did that extend their life because they were carrying out orders from random Reinsdorfs?
I don't think so. I can't be definitive because I wasn't in the room when maybe that conversation might have been had at that juncture, but I don't think so. They just all of a sudden saw a chance to get a Dwayne Wade. Did it put some extra fannies in the seats? Maybe a few, but to be honest with you, those seats were pretty much sold to begin with. Did it get some further goodwill with the fan base? I don't know.
It failed.
To be honest with you.
I think it was an attempt at that, David, that failed, right?
Because they didn't go anywhere, to be honest with you, with it, ultimately. And then Rondo, of course, hurt himself. I think the Bulls might have beaten the Celtics in that series if he stayed healthy, for what it's worth. But, that's revisionist history at this point. Ultimately, like I said, the rebuild constantly has changed here a little bit. They talked about going young and athletic, and then they bring in those two guys, which is, the antithesis of what they were talking about. So, it seemingly changes all the time.
That year stands out to me for exactly that. Let's go young and athletic, and then they bring in Wade and Rondo. And
is that the year they also drafted Denzel Valentine?
Yes.
Who at least was young.
Right, and certainly sort not of. Athletic. And wasn't really even that young.
No, it wasn't. Not compared to the 18-year-olds coming out.
Nope. No. So,
BS on
that. Absolutely. And it screwed up any potential timeline for this possible summer to be ready. And that was in a LeBron in the East universe. They willingly accepted dreams of mediocrity. And they slogged their way to the eighth seed, right? And I think they would have beaten the Celtics. I think you're right about that. But who cares? That would have been one extra series and some playoff revenue and two extra weeks of entertainment for Bulls fans. Look at the East now with no LeBron. Toronto made a deal going for it. Philly made two deals going for it. Milwaukee adds Nico going for it. And the Bulls are not even remotely appetizing, and they know it. Sad.
They're going to have to get lucky, guys. I mean, they're going to need a Zion Williamson or I don't know if there's anybody else of that ilk. The other kid there is
Barrett,
good.
RJ Barrett.
Williamson is the prize, obviously.
Okay, so did you see any movies, and do you have Oscar picks for us, since we're not going to be, I don't know what next week's going to be, but...
When is the Oscars?
Two weeks from tomorrow.
From tomorrow,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I saw a couple movies. I probably saw even more than a couple movies, but my senility doesn't remember them all since it's been so long. I saw Stan and Ollie, which is about Laurel and Hardy.
Yeah, John C. Reilly. I really want to see that.
Grew up
he did a really good job, and so did Steve Coogan as the other character. I mean, I thought they both did a good job. Now, it's not the most exciting movie. It's a little slow-moving at first and then picks up a little bit towards the end, but it's interesting because I learned something from this. Laurel and Hardy were much like the Three Stooges, and I don't mean just comedians.
No, there's only two of them, David. There's only two and three.
I do understand the difference between that.
They're not that much like them.
No, what I meant by that is that the fact that they got screwed by the industry back in those days, and they didn't make the money that they deserved to be making like they did in the movies, much like the Three Stooges got screwed by all the revenue that was kept away from them. So in order to try and recoup some of that money at the tail end of their careers, they went over to Europe and they were doing some shows there to try and bring some more life back into their shows. And ultimately, unfortunately, one of the two of them got sick, and that was pretty much the end of their relationship. But it was really an interesting movie, and I thought John C. Reilly and Steve Coogan did a really good job. It's not really getting that much acclaim, or it's not that many people are going to see it at the theaters, but I definitely think it was worth seeing, no question. The other movie I saw going back a few weeks was Ben is Back, which actually did get some acclaim by the critics, Julia Roberts and Lucas Hedges. I wasn't as gung-ho as the critics on this movie. I didn't really find it totally believable, to be honest with you, but, still worth seeing overall. So those are the two movies that I can remember.
Did you see The Trip and the two Trip movies that Steve Coogan made?
I did not.
Me neither. I've heard they're very, very good.
They are treasures.
Yeah.
He and Rob Brydon, and they spend just, they're talented comedians. They take this trip. It's a wonderful idea, well executed. I love Steve Coogan, wildly underrated. So
yeah, he was really, really good in this movie. As far as the Oscars, guys, it's not the greatest of years for movies overall. For me, the best movie I saw was Green Book. I don't know if that's going to win or not. It's won a few honors at some of these other shows that have been cropping up over the last month or so. To me, it was the best movie I saw. I don't know if Black Klansman or Black Panther or the Rhapsody movie is going to win. I have no idea, but for me, the best movie I saw was Green Book.
Thank you, David.
I loved Star is Born. I think for some,
that was really good too.
For some reason, it's getting just a little bit minimized in terms of the competition, and it shouldn't be. I thought it was absolutely brilliantly done.
He got screwed by obviously not being nominated for Best Director.
Right. By the way, Peoria Matt says via text that he thought Stan and Ollie was a documentary about Garpacks. I understand why he would.
They're more like the Three Stooges because they're making enough mistakes for three people.
Well, Boylan is Curly.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. No, he's actually Joe Besser.
By the way, the story of Stan and Ollie and guys like that getting screwed from, they're just paid their contracts and they didn't, not the residuals. The best story about that, the Monkees were the same way.
Okay.
The Monkees were hired to play the Monkees.
Right, hired as actors.
By Don Kirshner.
Yep.
And when Mike Nesmith, the story goes, Mike Nesmith found out what Don Kirshner was making and what the Monkees, the people playing the Monkees weren't, that Mike Nesmith hung Don Kirshner out the Capitol building's record, the famous looking corncob building.
Suge Knight action here.
Yes, hung him out there until the contractors reworked.
Suge Nesmith. I had no idea.
Yeah, it's right. So that's the story. That's how you get even. That's sort of a musical Luca Brasi. Either your brain or that signature is going on the contract.
Hey, Maddie, has the Tributosaurus ever played the Monkees?
As a matter of fact, we have. We have.
Really?
Yeah, because those songs are unbelievably good.
One of them was Carole King and Jerry Goffin.
A lot of them were. She wrote Pleasant Valley Sunday.
It's her birthday today. We should Carole have Chris Hine on.
Yeah, I'm in. But no, a lot of them were Carole King, Jerry Goffin, Barry Mann, Cynthia Weil, Neil
yes.
Diamond wrote a bunch of them. It's like they were brill building songwriters. There's some really, really good ones in there. So, yes, sir.
So you did a Monkees.
Yeah, it was great fun. Because you think it's just such a jokey little stuff, but the depth of really good songs in there is quite something.
See?
Agreed.
Last Train to Turdsville is not just a throwaway line.
Mm-hmm.
David, thanks. We appreciate it.
See you guys.
All right. That's David Schuster.
I'll tell you one. Barry Mann, Cynthia Weil wrote one called Love is Only Sleeping. Oh, man. It's so creepy and so good.
So creepy?
Creepy.
Why is it creepy?
It's a creepy monkeys tune because it's dark. I'm telling you. It's like it's dark. It's got a it's in seven. It's weird. And it's just
it's in seven?
Yes. It's ominous. It's got a thing.
Man and Weil, when you saw it, did you see Beautiful?
I did.
10 times like Chris Hine?
Just once.
Okay. We saw it and went home and looked up Man and Weil, did not realize. Knew they were important, did not realize their significance.
You've lost that love and feeling.
Right. But they once did, I think they did a tour show, a lounge act, where they played their music, mm-hmm. and it was called They Wrote That?
Yeah.
And I think I love that. One of the all-time great titles. They're remarkable. I mean, Carole King, you know, but Man and Weil were, oh my God, they wrote that?
On Broadway.
That? That was it.
It just goes on and on. We got to get out of this place by the Animals, they wrote.
Eric Burdon and the Animals?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. All right. I'm Venus in Blue Jeans, as long as we're going back that far, and he's the doe-eyed Matt Spiegel. At top of the hour, we'll talk to Mark Gonzalez about the Cubs, rules changes. You know, there was Rob, the commissioner said something that may or may not speed up the trade of Kyle Schwarber. We'll talk about that when we come back, and we'll talk about it with Gonzo. And
there's also a bit of White Sox. There's a Machado rumor that's old news being repurposed as new news. It's confusing people, so I want to clarify.
Let's make sure
that.
We spread it, and as long as it includes the idea that Machado won't sign with the Bulls either because he thinks they're a bad organization. Rosenblum and Spiegel, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Are we on the air?
Because Spiegel's playing me the creepy monkey song on his phone.
Whoops.
And
sorry about that.
After checking to see if the vegan menu is still available. And I don't know why we have to get interrupted. Can you at least give the name of the song? Because we have texters wanting to know.
Love is only sleeping.
Love is only sleeping.
Love is only sleeping.
So is it? Does it venture into necrophilia?
No.
I mean, where are we here?
Yeah, no. I
never thought the monkeys are creepy. They were just happy. There's Davy Jones and Mickey Dolenz. They're all so happy.
Mm-hmm.
And...
No, that one's just a little bit of dark. I like the dark with the funny, the dark with the sweet.
I like the dark chocolate with the raspberry.
See, there you go. You like pineapple and stir fry?
No. I like the dark chocolate with a raspberry. It should be in dessert. That's too sweet.
Oh, yeah, those are too sweets. My bad.
I don't like sweet and savory.
You don't like the sweet and, no. The sweet and savory?
No.
Do you
They're separate but equal. It's sort of sweet and savory are like the orthodox menu for me. They need to be separate.
Really?
Yes.
How about
sweet
an art?
On
Do you like comedies that are really dark and gruesome, like In Bruges? Did you see In Bruges?
I did not.
Oh, it's so good.
I did. I will settle for comedy noir.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, like I could do that.
Fargo,
yes,
right? Fargo is that?
You know what? Frances McDormand could just, she could read the phone book.
Mm-hmm.
She could go door to door, whatever she's going to do. I'm good with that. Frances McDormand. All right, so let's spread some rumors.
Okay. Yes.
Okay, you start with, you do your Manny Machado thing.
Jim Duquette, the former general manager of the Baltimore Orioles, among others, was on SNY last night. And
was he on the toilet or just on SNY?
No, that's Jim Bowden.
Oh.
That's our flusher.
Kind
the mad flusher.
Flush.
You know, we had two guests. We had two guests on Inside the Outhouse today, and not one of them was flush on the toilet. It's a huge disappointment.
Sorry, I interrupted.
You did, but here's my whole point about that.
Okay. Jim Duquette
was asked about the Yankees and Manny Machado, and he said that the offer that the Yankees had made to Machado was 7 or 8 years, $220 million. MLB.com repurposed that interview, and it was a news story today, and it was in people's feeds. Oh, my God, and they saw that and read that as, this is a new offer from the Yankees to Manny Machado. And that is not what the story is. Duquette was talking about when they met 7 or 8 weeks ago. That was the offer. He also said that other teams were in that range, and the Yankees are not expected to be the highest bidder. So,
wow, the White Sox are in a game where the Yankees are not going to be the highest bidder?
Yeah, if you, yes.
Is that what you're,
yes.
So it's not, it was an offer 2 months ago, say, just for argument's sake, just for
that's what Jim Duquette is saying the offer was, yeah.
And he said no then.
He said no then.
It's not available anymore?
You look at the Yankees' construction, it doesn't make sense to me that it would be available now. They went out and got DJ LeMahieu. Troy Tulowitzki's on a minor league deal.
Right.
They haven't traded Miguel Andujar. Camp is here. They got a whole bunch of other stuff with their money, signed Zach Britton. You know, it doesn't make sense to me that that would still be something that they would currently want. But they paired that in the news story with quotes from Hank Steinbrenner from earlier saying, well, we're not out of anything until opening day. You know me. You know, so that all was, it's the kind of, in my opinion, it's the kind of non-news that stokes the fires. And we've got a bunch of people texting about it today. Like, hey, did you hear this? Did you hear this? It's old. It's
fake
old
news.
Right.
So what would you say? I brought this up to Rick Camp and I were talking about it yesterday, and I brought it up to Burns. He said, if you're the White Sox, whatever your offer is to right now, you know you have a higher ceiling. Given the stasis of this situation and the inertia and the fear of moving and also the fear of collusion, because clearly people are colluding. Well, if you're the White Sox, and they already went through the – before, when it was $9 million, they blew right through 10 and went to $11 million for Joey Bell 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't you go now? Let's say your highest is 225 with $75 million in makeable bonuses, because they've done that before with players. I'm going back to Horace Grant; they gave him a real low ball contract, but with makeable, and it went all the way up. Why wouldn't you do that? Why don't you end it now? Say, Manny, here's our deal.
They might.
I don't know if they would or wouldn't, because Burnsy was thinking the negotiations don't really start until you get a competitive offer. And I said, no, that if you're the White Sox, you say, this is it. We need to move on. We need to make a team. We want him. We're doing it in good faith. It's the best offer you've gotten. Take it.
This offseason.
Or not. And you have one day.
Yeah, well, the offseason's going to end. Whether you like it or not, the offseason is going to end, and everybody's playing this game of chicken. So I hear what you're saying, and that the White Sox could step up, and they could create the artificial deadline.
Since somebody needs to do it, because Major League Baseball is going to end up in court again for collusion. That's what that will. If they don't find the emails, Major League Baseball will be lucky. But if there's some communication, because clearly that's what's going on. And by the way, there's an Onion headline I wanted to share. I didn't want to forget.
Do it.
Bryce Harper asks if Philly's willing to move to another city.
Philly, no. Padres? Yeah. Padres, maybe. Padres, probably.
We'll take a break. We'll discuss the Cubs, Kyle Schwarber, rule changes, what's going on as they, as pitchers and catchers prepare to report on the most overheated, overrated day outside of signing day in sports. I'm Venus in blue jeans. He's the doe-eyed one. We're Rosenblum and Spiegel, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.